You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Rule number one, don't open the door.
Wow, how did they film that? What is going on?
I think that was one of the best scenes I've seen in a lot of movies.
When you're watching them, you're like, what am I watching?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh, no, you love me. You know you love me.
This is like art, dude. This is like right in your face, incredible.
I can't stop watching it. What the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
I mean, I fell in love with it from the opening credits.
It just kind of blew my mind how brilliant it was.
We just know. We can tell. We've watched so many VHS movies.
Yeah, we are sad, sad people.
Hello and welcome out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a recurring podcast and a YouTube channel where two guys get together. We talk about horror movies, science fiction movies, television series, things like that, key influences on the topic of the day, and then key things that topic may have influence going down the line. Tim and I are old friends. We've been doing this for a long time, much longer probably than we want to admit to anybody. But we enjoy bringing it out to you guys. And we enjoy the dialogue that's happening with you guys. This is an unscripted podcast and YouTube episode. So we don't even know what we're going to say to each other. So it'll be kind of interesting. If you're new to us, please let us know a little bit about you. Maybe leave a comment down below. How'd you find us? What linked you to us? That sort of thing. Maybe give us a review or stars if you like what you see today. And if you're returning and haven't done those things, why don't you do it now? Take 2 minutes and just leave us a little comment down below or whatever. Again, my name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Tim, how's it been going? What have you been doing this week?
Oh, my goodness. What have I been doing? Well, we normally start these things with a little genre tidbit of something that we might have seen during the week that people might be interested in. And considering today's topic, I watched a little film called The Innkeepers. The Innkeepers is a a Ty West movie.
Oh, okay. I thought I'd heard the title before.
Ty, of course, did The House of the Devil, which we covered a few years back. The Innkeepers is not as old as The House of the Devil. It came out in 2011. I think House of the Devil was 2009. I was very surprised by this film because I was expecting a Ty West, not necessarily a period piece, because Ty likes to do period pieces, but I was expecting it to be, you know, just straight out horror, and it's not. It's actually quite funny in places. Okay. I think mainly because of the lead actress, Sarah Paxton, who I don't see in a lot of stuff, but I have to say she's fantastic. I loved her in this. So, like I said, I was surprised by it. It's basically about the final days at the Yankee Peddler Inn. Two employees determined to reveal the hotel's haunted past begin to experience disturbing events as old guests check in for a final stay. The hotel is closing. So basically, two people are running it, and they're sleeping there and doing like 12-hour shifts and rotating back and forth. But they start trying to film paranormal phenomena. So it does have some really scary stuff in it. The cast is great. It's got not only Sarah Paxton, but it's got Pat Healy, who plays her cohort, and Kelly McGillis is in this movie from Top Gun, if you remember. She's an actress from the 80s. She's older now. I did not realize this. I did a little research. She had, I guess, become chemically dependent with either drugs or alcohol, and she has now rehabilitated. And did you know that she teaches acting in Asheville, North Carolina?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Really?
So she is really close to you. You can go over there and say hi.
I'll put on my leather jacket and go over there with my motorcycle.
Yeah. I wouldn't rank this up there with House of the Devil or maybe even our subject of today. It does get 80% on Rotten Tomatoes with 121 reviews. I think that's a pretty fair rating. It's fun, but it doesn't have that menace or dread that we know Ty West for now. So that's the only difference. It's fun to go back and see it, though, to see where, you know, where that he can do other stuff because he's done a lot of television as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I did in my genre week.
All right. That's interesting because I had to put in my notes, House of the Devil, where do I know that title, blah, blah, blah. I need to look it up. And I didn't, and you just reminded me. So that helps for later on. Genre week, what have I been doing? Okay, so finally, I've hinted at this. I've talked about it several times and hinted at it a couple of times in my what did you do genre week, but I finally put my Black Mirror list together because with the writer strike over, now Booker is starting to supposedly the scuttlebutt is he's starting to write. He's starting to announce that there will be a Black Mirror new season coming season
with more werewolves.
Hopefully, freaking not. I'm hoping, but because you know how I feel about that. Anyway, hopefully he'll go back to what made Black Mirror Black Mirror and what it works and part of my, so I treated mine, I actually did them all, every, like, it's like 30 episodes or whatever. I did them all in order, but I'm only going to do the top five because we do top five, and all of that. But for those of you who are familiar with Black Mirror, you can look up these titles and they will be the five best of all of the Black Mirror series. And, number five is The Entire History of You. A really great story. That's the one that I was telling you about, Tim, in case you don't remember, they have everybody in the future, everybody has cameras embedded in their eyes. So they record everything all the time. And you can go home and like rewind your whole day and watch back stuff and look at stuff. And you can also share it with someone else, like a spouse who says, who were you looking at that party? And now she goes, let me see where your eyes were in that party. Oh. So it can get really bad really quick. But The Entire History of You, 5 million credits is one of my favorites from season one. It's like the fourth episode ever of Black Mirror, and it's always been one of my favorites. San Junipero is on everyone's list as usually their top number one.
That's the two women, right?
Correct. And it's an excellent story and so well done. It is not my number one, though. My number one is USS Callister, which is the science fiction one, a la Star Trek sort of thing about the guy who is actually taking people and imprisoning them in a game, an online science fiction game. And that is one of the announcements that came out earlier this year that they're actually going to turn that into a limited series. And everybody's all speculating. So is it the actual – it's kind of like somebody announces they're doing Galaxy Quest as a series. Well, are you going to do Galaxy Quest, which is the actors show playing it, or are you doing the actual story?
Documentary
of,
or – yeah. Mockumentary or whatever. Yeah.
So that's what they're talking about. Callister, everybody doesn't know. Are you doing the actual Black Mirror episode where this guy's a villain and he's – putting his coworkers into this world? Or are you actually going to tell the story of the adventures of this spaceship? So nobody knows yet, but it'll be interesting. But anyway, that's my top. And that's what I did. I reviewed some of those. I looked at it. I had to go back and see snippets of all 30 episodes just so I could kind of put it in order the way I wanted it. But that's Black Mirror. And please,
Black Mirror. You are obsessed. I mean, that may have to become one of our Patreon things.
It should be. I should just do a Black Mirror every week, you know, and just talk about it. And
well,
how it
no,
works.
I mean, but, like, you know. We've done two seasons of Star Trek and we've done two seasons of The X-Files. We'll probably do at least two more seasons of The X-Files. What I'm saying is maybe the next one we move on to will be Black Mirror.
Ooh, that would be
It wouldn't
awesome.
Take as long. We could do it in one season, probably, because it's only like six episodes a season.
Yep. Yeah, easily. And I think that would be great because it's, yeah. I mean, it's 80% of the 80% of the time, Black Mirror hits it. They really do. And it works well. But, you know, last season, not the best season they ever did. Hopefully, it's not a sign of the future. We know that, though. Anyway.
Well.
That's what I did, you know, delved into a multi-genre series.
Well, I delved into Ty West, and this movie is full of mirrors, and it's black.
It's pretty black.
Yep. It's pretty black. We're covering today a movie that came out in 2022 called X.
Yep. Yep.
David really wanted to do this movie because he thought it was a porno.
No. Dang it.
As I said, it's directed by Ty West. This movie is a little notorious because it spawned a sequel rapidly, but there were extenuating circumstances that made that happen. We'll get into later. Mm-hmm. And now it has a third one coming out that's, I guess, in post-production now. But this movie, the plot of this movie is great. It reminds me a lot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which we'll talk about in the keys. But basically, mm-hmm. it's about a crew of young filmmakers that are going to make a porno, and they go on location to this building on this farm that they rented. It's a separate building from the main farmhouse where an old couple live. And as they're making this movie, strange things start happening, and eventually it basically turns into a slasher movie, and everyone is killed off one by one. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know that I need to explain any more than that. Do you think?
Well, I'm sure as we go through this, there'll be spoilers. So if you haven't watched it, you know, please go watch it now because there are some twists and turns to this
right.
story.
And there is a twist on the final girl as well.
Yes, very much so. And
it's not like other slashers. It's quite unique.
It's quite unique in its storytelling too. Just the way he does his things. It's very similar to House of the Devil.
Yeah, House of the Devil was set in 1980, and that movie looked like it was filmed in 1980.
Yes.
And same this film movie stock, is set everything. In the 70s, and it looks like it was filmed in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, not quite as much. He does a little bit better with photography in this movie.
This has better. This isn't done with the same lensing and filming as the 70s. No. But it does have the same feel, aesthetically, production design, everything, of a late 70s, early 80s movie. A very Toby Hooper-inspired sort of vision.
Mm-hmm. The house even looks like the house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah.
Easily. And I was proud because I actually saw this movie before you. This was horror movie that I actually got to
because
see.
Because you thought it was a porno.
No, I just was – I was very intrigued because – and I think I told this on the whatever episode it was last year or year before when I saw it. I was very intrigued with the premise of a porno that becomes a horror movie. Or, you know, the combining of those. I was going, why hasn't that ever been done? Why hasn't anybody ever done that sort of thing? I mean, you've had sex in horror movies, but always. To actually have this whole group trying to do a found, you know, and I even thought when I first watched it, hopefully this isn't a found footage. Hopefully it's not a found footage, it's not. But this whole thing of a group trying to do a porno that suddenly turns into a slasher movie. And I thought it was a cool idea and relatively well done.
Yeah, I just misspoke. I said there's been sex in horror films always, and that's not true. It really didn't come along until the 70s, especially with movies like Friday the 13th, where people were seemingly punished for having sex
by
the killer.
Oh, yeah, you have sex, you die. Right, and if you're the virgin, you're the final girl.
Yeah, and then there was sex appeal in 60s movies and 50s with Hammer and showing like a nude breast or something.
Brides of Dracula.
But actual sex, I guess, didn't really come into horror movies until the 70s. But then again, sex came into all movies in the 70s, kind of, when you think about it.
Well, there was a lot of auteur in the 70s, which had a lot of French influence. And France, you know, it's not unrealistic to show nudity in a French film.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I've been watching some films that actually fit in that category. That is not today's subject. Today's subject is X. What is your... Do you want to talk about your first experience? I know you did this on a genre week, like a season or two back.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time, so this would be your second time watching it.
Yeah, so my biggest takeaways when I first saw it were I really liked the the tonal shift in it. You know, it's like during the daylight, we're going to do the, well, I love the structural of it. I love the fact that we have this very slow paced opening of just a crime scene. And we don't know what the hell is going on. And then suddenly we go, whoop, and credit sequence, and we're in a flashback
right.
of everything.
So it's a bookend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the way they show the, you know, everything during the daylight is the porno movie and boobies, and we're going to do all this. But with a little bit of dread, just because characters are creepy. The old man and the old lady are kind of creepy.
Well, but there's also okay. a very ominous pond that Mia Goth goes swimming in, and there's an yeah. alligator in it. So there's a yeah. very – there's a huge – I guess you would call it a huge foreshadowing
oh,
of
yeah.
dread with yes. that scene where you think she's out there swimming. She didn't realize there's an alligator in that pond. That
right.
that, see, that would be one of my scenes right there.
If oh, yeah.
talk scenes.
I totally agree. The way it's done – yeah. intercutting from intense close-ups of her in the water to huge drone aerial shots of her, and you see the crocodile slowly coming up and coming,
just
you know, and
you're going, doing the wave.
And you're going,
yeah.
oh. swim, woman, swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great suspense and well done. But then night falls and suddenly, yeah, we're in full-blown slasher, you know, pitchfork in the eyes. Kind of stuff happening, and you
which
just
is kind of strange because of the villains.
Which is another reason, even from my initial watch, that I really liked the way the villain in this.
There's two really.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, he's doing it for her because he loves her, you know, sort of thing. But I mean, Pearl is the villain in the piece, really. Right. And then, okay, so spoiler alert.
We're talking about first experiences, but
spoiler alert and everything. So let me ask you, did you know the little casting switch before you watched this movie and or during?
During it is when I figured it out, but I had to like double check IMDb like three times because I was like, that's not Mia Goth. And I was like, is it? Because she doesn't look like that old woman.
Yeah,
they
great.
Did like really good makeup.
Yes.
There's something about the nose that makes her almost look like a totally different person.
I think the two things that worked for me were the nose and the fact that she's balding. You know, she doesn't have a lot of hair
so
up
her
here
hair is
and
thinning.
So
yeah.
thinning and everything else. And the fact that they did it with him too, because he's in his 20s, early 30s too, the husband. And so to put him in the old age makeup as well, I was going, okay, that works then, because it kind of we kind of get used to it.
I don't think he's that young.
Oh,
but
yeah.
he is like in his 40s, probably. I mean, if you look at a picture of him on IMDb, he looks older.
Well, he's younger. The guy that plays Howard, Stephen Urey, I think is his name. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, he's younger than Howard, but I don't think he's as young as Mia Goth. I think he's more like
right.
our age or a little bit younger than us.
But yeah. putting him in the old age makeup worked for me as well.
Right.
And no, I didn't, it wasn't until I think the scene, the scene where they're both hunting, when they come back to the house and she's going, you know, where's the other girl and all that. I put one in the basement for you, da, 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 and all that, that I went, that has to be freaking Mia Goth. That's when it really hit me. It was just the way she said a couple of things. And I was going, that sounds, it has to be her. And then for the credits. And then they said it. And I went, oh, okay.
But there are scenes where they definitely used a body double. Because there are scenes where they're in the same scene together, obviously. And it's not always done with trick photography.
Yeah, I would think there were a couple of those, especially with her on the yeah. bed and then her sneaking up on her, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But because again, going into this the first time, and especially now after Pearl's come out and they're talking about the trilogy and all of that, I went, who is this Mia Goth and why is everybody in horror world just freaking out over her?
I didn't really know anything about her, and now she is one of my favorite actresses. I fucking love her.
Yeah, she's
and
she's
I had
strong.
No idea she was as strong as she is.
She is very strong and very good at. I mean, I am very curious to see Pearl. I mean, speaking of keys, but I am very curious to see Pearl because I have.
Well,
not.
I can tell you something.
And yeah,
I went ahead and watched it.
Did you?
I did. You beat and me. I like it better.
Really?
Okay. Well, it's a different kind of movie. And that's why I like it better, because it's not like anything I've ever seen before.
It's a prequel
and
to this,
it is.
Right?
And I thought it's a prequel to this. And I thought, you know, this should have been a double feature originally. When we were trying to figure out our double features last year, this was an option, as was The Day the Earth took fire, or whatever, The Day the Earth Caught Fire.
Yeah.
And we chose the other because it needed to be sci-fi instead of horror. And mm-hmm. I'm glad we did that, because this Pearl needs its own episode. It doesn't need to be in a double feature, even okay. though it's a sequel to this movie.
Okay.
But Pearl is the reason why Mia Goth is now one of my favorite actresses. So, anyway,
interesting.
Enough said about that, because that is not the movie we're talking about. We're talking about a movie that is more of an ensemble, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, although it is definitely from her point of view.
It is. I mean, you've got Jenna Ortega in there. You've got all the other cast members. I like the guy that's like the older leader guy, you know, the one that wants to make the porn or whatever.
Wayne.
Fucking the cameraman. Oh, my God. I
RJ.
Love him.
Yeah,
love
RJ's
him.
Good.
I'll get to him when we get to casting. Anyway, so my experience, obviously, this was my first experience, and it made me watch the sequel like the mm-hmm. very next night. Your experience is your second film. Did you enjoy it as much the second time around or more?
About the same, but I saw through it more this time, and I was going, okay. Yeah, it's not as great as I had imagined it the first time.
Oh, yeah?
Sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, still good, and still I recommend it. But mm-hmm. But again, it's not – that first time it just had all of the trappings were really good and really cool.
I just think Ty West is just getting better and better, because, I mean, he was already good when he was doing stuff back in the turn of the century. Like, I guess House of the Devil, I think, was 2009, so it was a little bit later. But – like with this, you see, well, I mentioned The Innkeepers, which I told you had some comedic stuff in it. Mm-hmm. This has the porn stuff in it, as well as the period piece. But then that scene again that I mentioned with the alligator, I mean, the suspense he creates with that is like genius level, I think.
Yeah, but then he does stuff like the killing Wayne, which is like borderline slasher movie of stupidity. You know, this guy is going looking for somebody in his underwear at night on a strange farm in the dark.
Well, they don't. They make a point to show that he's not. He doesn't mind walking around naked.
Right, but I mean, but and then steps on a nail, which is the whole kind of.
No, you're talking about. Yeah, I was talking about
Wayne,
the black guy.
No, I'm talking about Wayne, the
sorry.
Producer.
I thought you were talking about when he's out in the swamp or the pond with the alligator.
And you know, I felt myself doing almost the second time around, I felt myself almost like in Scream when you're going, okay, if you're in a barn and you see a shadow come across two holes in the wall, don't look in the holes. That is not a smart thing to do ever. You know, have you never seen a horror movie? So it kind of,
you know, now that you mention it, that kill bothers me too, because what is it exactly that gets shoved into his eyes?
Well, she says later, I mean, when the shot I do like is they cut away from that to everything else. They cut back and you're just seeing his body lying there and the shadow of Pearl comes up on the wall. And then you see she passes the camera and she comes up and she has a pitchfork and she stabs him again, and then she just starts covering his body.
I know, but if there's just two holes, the pitchfork would have to be perfectly aligned, and you would have to have only two prongs. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Plus the fact that she has to sit there and wait until he just gets right there to stab it in. I mean, that doesn't make sense. The rest of the kills actually work in this. As a matter of fact, the shotgun kills are pretty freaking scary and abrupt and impressive.
Yeah.
You know, but... But so that was the only slasher. Like I said, the second time watching, I could see some quote slasher stick that I was going, you could have done better. You do better at everything else.
Yeah, I think you could. I mean, I was I, that is it raised a question with me. You know, yeah, what instrument of killing would fit exactly in those two holes? I was like, that didn't make sense to me. Okay, I forgot about that.
Makes sense. Makes sense. But yeah.
But okay, so those are our opinions and experience with the movie. Do you have any other scenes besides the alligator scene?
Wow, the alligator scene is really good.
It's so good, and it sets up so many events that turn out later, mm-hmm, and also in the prequel, because there's alligators in that lake in the prequel as well.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
My
it's a great way for killers to dispose of bodies, I'll say that.
My next,
feed them to the gators.
Yeah, feed them to the gator. It works. My next scene is the actual, I guess I would call it the heart of the story, and that's the scene when they're all sitting around after they've been filming that day. It's the scene where Jenna Ortega's character actually says, "I want to be in the movie." And they're talking about sexuality, and aren't you ashamed of doing this? And no, I'm not, because it's just sex. And what do you think about seeing your boyfriend do this? And who cares? It's, you know, because they're strippers. You know, Maxine and the other girl, the Brittany Snow character, are both strippers.
They're strippers. So they do this for a living. They're basically leaving their job for a weekend to go film a porno out in the country.
Yeah. And that's probably how Wayne told it to them, too. Right. We're going to make a fortune.
Because this is a new era, you know. We're going to – videos coming or whatever.
People can actually watch movies in their living rooms on their VHSs, you know, and sort of – so that – but that whole scene is like the heart of the movie. And it's talking about how much you're willing to see your – friends or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your coworker do, not do, whatever. Where's your moral balance? All of that. And it results in her going, "I want to be in it." And he goes, "You can't. Why not?" "Well, blah, blah, blah. Well, you said I could," you know. And that's what leads RJ to leave, because, you know, he does film the scene with her, but then he leaves.
That's some tremendous work with him and Jenna Ortega as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally, but then again, I know him from other films and I know her from other films. So there's a lot of strong people in this cast.
Oh, yeah.
My second scene would be the scene where Pearl comes into Maxine's room at night and gets in bed with her.
Yep.
Because I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is happening? Because they hint at it earlier. Because Maxine ends up going to the farmhouse, and I don't know why these people feel they can just walk into someone's house without knocking. I don't understand that.
I know.
But, you know, she very subtly, Pearl flirts with Maxine in that scene, like strokes her just gently, and Maxine looks at her, and she's like, it'll be our secret or something. And then later on that night, in the dark, she gets into bed with Maxine. But my favorite part is they cut away and show some other scene, and then they cut back to Maxine waking up face to face with her and just this blood-curdling scream. Yep.
The way she slowly wakes up.
I watched it like three times. I was laughing so hard. I was like, I would do the exact same thing.
I like the scene before they do the cutaway when she's in bed with her and she reaches out and she's stroking her back and her hip and she's leaving blood because she's just killed Wayne and her hands are bloody and everything. Right. And you're going, holy crap, this is crazy. And even to increase the creep factor, like two scenes later, they're having sex in that bed with Maxine underneath them, and you're just going, oh.
Yeah, I did not anticipate seeing a porno scene between two old people. I did not.
And again, I love that. I go, you know, it's like, serves you right. You won't see a dang porno? Here's your porno.
Yeah. It's just my heart. Whew. My heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are my two scenes that I can think of off the top of my head.
My other scenes are all of Jenna's in the basement, all the stuff with that. The original,
yeah,
the original walking around and seeing the thing, the big scream, which is what people.
Well, she finds a light, and when she turns it on, you see a body hanging in the background.
Yeah. Well, and the reason she went to get the light is because he told her to. You know, he said, there's a flashlight downstairs. Would you go get it for me? And that's why she goes to get it.
But she turns an overhead light on. It's a string.
Well, that's after she's trapped. Yeah. And she comes down, turns it, and you see the body.
And you see the body in the background. You're like, holy fuck. Yeah. As soon as he says, go down to the basement and get that flashlight, I'm like, fuck you.
Again, I was going, no way. I kept thinking, is he doing this on purpose to those of us who like slasher movies? Is he saying, have you never seen a slasher movie before? No, when the creepy old guy asks you to go in the basement, you don't do that. You just don't.
She clearly doesn't want to go down there. So I'm yep. like, why are you doing this? It just reminded me of something I need to put down as a key, okay. actually.
And then the next scene, you know, same thing. Any scene with her in the basement, you know, when she comes up and she finally takes the axe and hits through the door or the hatchet, and she's reaching over, and he literally breaks like three of her fingers.
With the gun butt.
With the gun butt. And she's just screaming and bloody and everything. He's going, you stay down there. I was, oh man, it was good.
Just do what you do, what's best for you. Stay down there.
Yep. I told her to stay in the basement. Yeah. I've got in my watch notes, these are two crazy old creeps. I'll just tell you that.
I have a key to that too. But anyway, okay. we're not going to keys yet. Did you have something you want to say before I delve into cast?
No.
I've got a little production.
Yeah, sure.
This movie is set, I think, in Texas.
Yes.
And it looks like Texas, and it's fucking New Zealand. Yep.
Shot in New Zealand.
Everything was shot in New Zealand.
Yep.
Home of what? Peter Jackson.
Yes. And Weta did the makeup effects in this. They did old age makeup. His effect studio that he created for Lord of the Rings did this.
Oh, yep. No wonder it's so good.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Well, it was filmed in Queensland, New Zealand. It had a budget of $1 million. In the U.S. and Canada, it grossed almost $12 million. Its opening weekend, it grossed $4 million. And worldwide, to date, it has grossed almost $15 million. So it is the epitome of like the little slasher movie that could, where they start with a very small budget and it just goes, you know, viral, basically.
Yep.
And like I said, spawned a sequel. We'll get into that when we get into trivia. Let's talk about cast. I mentioned Mia Goth. She's kind of the it horror girl right now. There's a few of those. But she, I mean, you could call her a Scream Queen, but I don't really know that these roles in this trilogy fit Scream Queen because she's a little bit more than a victim.
In her other character, her Maxine character would be a Scream Queen, don't you think?
In this film.
Yes. Maxine, not Pearl. Maxine.
Yeah, but the third movie is going to be called Maxine. So I'm assuming she's going to be a killer.
Well, I would hope. I mean, I would think so, yes.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
But she not only did that, this trilogy, she also was in the remake of Suspiria, which I have not seen.
I haven't either.
Yeah, and Infinity Pool, which is the Brandon Cronenberg movie Skarsgård. She's in that as well. So she's got a little bit of horror on her resume. Her real name, I'm assuming this is something a teenager might have done, unless her parents are hippies. But her real name is Mia Gypsy Mello Da Silva Goth.
Really?
Yeah, I think that sounds like something a kid would do.
Okay.
Her nickname is Brush Cut, which I think is funny.
Okay.
Hey, Brush Cut. She was born October 25th, 1993, in Southwark, London, to a Brazilian mother and a Canadian father. She has triple citizenship in England, Brazil, and Canada.
Wow.
I think that's very, very interesting.
I think her dad added the gypsy.
Do you know who she's married to?
No.
Shia LaBeouf.
Really?
They're in divorce right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. That she was married to him in 2016, but has since filed for divorce. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I didn't know that at all.
Was she a Nymphomaniac? The movie?
Is that a movie? I never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a two-part movie, but what's his name? I'll look it
up. I thought you asked me if she was a Nymphomaniac.
Was she in Nymphomaniac? It's I forgot who directed it, but I'll look it up really good. But it's got everybody. Stellan Skarsgård's in it. Oh,
I love him.
Lars von Trier. It's his movie.
Oh, it's Swedish. Okay.
And yeah, it's a two-parter. And
yeah, I don't know anything about it.
Uma Thurman, Christian Slater, Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, my God. That's a great cast. I love those two. All right. Interesting. No, I don't know. But okay. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot more of her.
Oh, I guarantee we'll see
Mia Goth.
More of Mia Goth.
I mean, she's coming on to me, onto the scene to me like Florence Pugh.
Yes.
Yep. You know what I mean? Or that chick from The Witch, Anya Taylor-Joy.
Anya Taylor-Joy?
Yeah. All these women in these horror movies are just doing it. They're rocking my world.
On IMDb, she's got Frankenstein in production.
Which is Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, and Blade, the new reboot of Blade.
Which is Marvel.
Yep.
Yeah, wow.
And she's already in production of both of those. So, yeah, I think we'll see her a lot more.
I can see why Del Toro would tap her for Frankenstein. That's a great.
That's pretty interesting.
And she's going to be the bride, I'm sure.
I'll bet she is.
Jenna Ortega is also in this movie. She is another rising star that is dipping her toe a lot in the horror genre. She plays Lorraine. But other horror movies, she's in the new Scream franchise. She's been in two of those. She's in this, and she plays Wednesday Addams in the Wednesday Addams series on television. Not really horror, but it's kind of gothic comedy.
Yep.
And it's coming out with a second season as well. The next one, you know better than I do. I had never heard of her. Brittany Snow plays
Brittany
Bobby
Snow.
Lynn. Yeah. I don't know her.
This is her first nude scenes.
Apparently like her first non-musical or something, because she does musicals.
Well, her big deal was Pitch Perfect. She's done all four of those movies.
And she was in Hairspray.
Yep. The research I did for her said she did come from a theater background. So she was originally
It makes sense.
Done all the Pitch Perfects.
She does a lovely rendition of Landslide by Stevie Nicks in this movie. I was really impressed with that.
I was too.
I think it's great that Ty took advantage of her abilities and let her do it.
It's kind of a trivia production thing, but I thought it was very interesting that the credit sequence for this movie, it's like 7.5 freaking minutes long. I went, really? They needed that many people to do this movie? But part of that is all of the music, because all the music is period centric. There is not incidental music. Any music in this is a pop song from the 70s.
Right. They've even got Robert Palmer doing Bad Case of Loving You.
Yeah. So it's all in here. But I thought it was very interesting that the credits were so long, but a lot of it is these title cards of the music that was used. Yeah.
And I love the choice of the song Bad Case of Loving You.
Oh.
Because it's about basically Howard's love for Pearl.
Yeah.
Bad Case of Loving You.
Well,
Landslide
is great too, because it talks about growing old and age and losing it.
Yes.
Because we haven't touched on that. The thematic underneath this whole thing is regret. It is, you know, you aren't young anymore. And you don't, when you're young, you don't appreciate what you have. That old, elderly cliche.
Adage.
The young don't know how well they've got it and they don't appreciate what they've got, kind of thing. So that's very interesting. His song choices and that thematic all the way through it.
Yeah. So. Speaking of music, Kid Cudi or Cutie played Jackson.
Yeah.
It's spelled Cudi. I bet it's pronounced Cutie, like cutie pie. He's a rapper. I don't know anything about him. I don't know a thing about him. Yeah, he plays Jackson, the male lead of the porno film. He clearly has a big appendage because you see a silhouette of it when he's standing in the doorway.
Whether real or not, we don't know. We never see
it. It's implied that he has a very big package.
And he fits that cliche of a 70s porn star, even down to the baby blue leisure suit sort of thing. And because the porno they're shooting is called The Farmer's Daughter.
Farmer's Daughter. I mean, that's a cliche in itself.
It is. Yes. It's so cliche.
Pretty funny. The guy that played Wayne. You know what? Maybe he isn't as old as I thought he was. I thought he was a little bit older, but he definitely looked. Okay, this is why he's older. I knew he was older. He's a Kiwi that moved, and I mean New Zealander. He moved to Australia to star in the short-lived Echo Point and Sweat, which also starred a very young Heath Ledger. The pair became friends, and Martin convinced Heath to move to Sydney, Australia, and make a go of a career. So he was there. I mean, they lived together, too. They were roommates. So he's Heath Ledger's age.
Well, and it's but this is Wayne, right? You're talking about Wayne,
I'm talking about Wayne, the guy that plays Wayne. I'm sorry, folks. He's the leader of their little porn clan, basically.
It's kind of a key, but not. But I have in my notes. So this is the poor man's Matthew McConaughey.
Look like Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. If you can't get Matthew, get Martin. He'll do it. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of thing. So yeah, I thought he was really strong in this though, because you have to have that kind of. He has to ground the whole first 20 minutes of this movie.
Yeah.
Nobody else does it because he's the only one that knows what's going on. So he has to be strong enough to convince all of them to be the salesman. And he obviously, I think, did you get the impression he runs the club or yes. is a bartender thought, at the I club or something?
I thought maybe he was the club manager. That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, and because he talks about, I'll fire you or I'll have to put you on stage more or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I got that impression.
And he does the business transaction with Howard to rent the building or whatever.
Because
that's a good scene too. When they first arrive and he goes to talk to Howard, Howard's holding a shotgun on him saying, I'm going to kill you. But then he's like, don't you remember we talked on the phone? I'm renting the building or whatever. And finally he convinces him to put the gun down.
Yep.
Very tense. Very, very tense.
And I love because they see it from the car. Maxine's character sees, and she's watching to see.
Well, they do. It's a great silhouette of you, him standing in front of the door and just the gun sticking out of the door, the barrel of the shotgun. Yeah.
And I love the plant, because when he finally recognizes him, Howard puts the gun down and says, don't worry, it ain't even loaded anyway, sort of thing. And later on you learn, yes, it is.
It is loaded.
It is very frickin' loaded.
Right.
Yeah.
Owen Campbell plays RJ. Owen Campbell is also one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Yeah.
Probably because I know him better than you do.
Oh, okay.
Owen Campbell, I've talked about this in genre topics and in my little show I do, whatever, streaming with Shudder, streaming whatever. Mm-hmm. This kid has been in a lot of films that I have watched, including Super Dark Times, which I basically decided I'm going to put on our list because now we're doing suspense as well as horror, and that movie would fit into the category.
Okay.
And one called My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To. I told you that's about a brother and a sister taking care of their younger brother who is a vampire. Oh, yeah. He is the vampire in it. So he is in that as well. Okay. And I've always thought this kid is strong. And here he is playing RJ in this movie. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a horror kid, too, because he's in a movie called Depraved that I've not seen, but that Joe, our friend Joe Powell, has recommended to me several times. So,
okay.
Anyway, so all these people rotating around in the horror movie world. But
Owen and Campbell, he's great in this. I love RJ's character because it reminds me of a younger me or that whole doesn't matter what genre you're in, you're going to elevate it beyond what it is. And you're the visionary who wants to change it and all that.
Well, and also so I like his character. The reason I love him and Jenna Ortega in this film is their characters have the most conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. she's like almost prudish and then decides, well, maybe I'll try to get laid and do a porno. And he yep. is the total hypocrite who's like, I'm making an art film until my girlfriend wants to be in it. Then yeah. fuck no, you're not yep. doing this. So you've got right. this huge fight between them. And then he goes out. Of course, it has a great murder. He gets killed first by Pearl. Isn't he first?
Oh, yeah.
I think yeah. He's before Wayne. Yeah, yeah.
And to Don't Fear the Reaper.
And she stabs him a damn 100 times in the throat, man. I bet his head just rolled away because she oh, just yeah. keeps stabbing him in right. the throat.
And murder. unlike other slashers that I've seen, when she's stabbing him, there are times when she has to, like, pull it out and resist. It's stuck. Yeah, it's just so good. Rather than, it's like.
Yeah, and props to T for, or I keep calling him T, sorry. I wish Ty West would spell his name like a regular person. But it's T-I, and I want to say T. But Ty West filmed this scene wonderfully with the way mm-hmm. it went from color to red, because red splashes yep. on the headlights of the car, and all of a sudden yep. it just goes from bad to darker, you know, because of the red. It's really good.
Very, very nice cinematography choice. And the mm-hmm. again, the music of Don't Fear the Reaper during this.
Which gets used in a lot of horror movies. Now that I think about it, it's in The Stand as well. Yeah.
As it should. Yeah.
Stephen Ure is, maybe, who was it we were talking about was an older actor? Was it Wayne or Howard?
Stephen Ure is Howard.
Okay. Yeah. Stephen Ure is in all the Lord of the Rings movies. He's in the Hobbit movies. He was in Ash versus the Evil Dead. When I look at him, he looks older to me, but he's not mm-hmm. as old as Howard. Howard looks like really old.
Oh, yeah.
And then Sheriff Dentler is played by James Galen. He is an African-American that starts and finishes the film, like you said, with the bookends. I know him from Meg, and he was also in Ash versus the Evil Dead, so he has that connection. I bet you that filmed in New Zealand. You think?
Ash versus Evil Dead?
Yeah, because isn't one of them maybe. Married to Xena?
Rob Tappert is married
to. Yeah, Rob Tappert's married to Lucy Lawless that plays Lucy Xena, Lawless. and that was filmed in New Zealand as well. So there's a
yeah, that would make sense. I mean, all of them, Sam and all of them, spent a lot of time in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. You know, with even Hercules, which they produced.
Right.
So yeah, that would make sense.
It would make sense, especially if two of these actors were also in it. And then the televangelist is great too, but we only see him on television. His name is Simon Prest, but he's always predicting gloom and doom in the background.
And he has the big twist at the end.
Which is what? I can't remember.
He's talking about how demons have corrupted the world, and he talks about get a close-up of this and pulls off, and it's a picture of Maxine, and it's his missing
daughter. Yeah, it's his daughter. I forgot about that.
Who he said was taken by demons and corrupted and blah, blah, blah. And
God, you gave me another key.
What a cool little twist at the end.
It was a great twist, and I had forgotten about it. Okay. Yeah.
And awesome. It makes sense because she starts in the very first scene when she's looking in the mirror. She has like two or three quotes she ends up saying through the movie at different times, and they come from him.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be a star, or you can do whatever you want. Well, I can't remember the lines, but they're very prophetic of what he is preaching from the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a cool, again, a layer to the script that you wouldn't see in a normal, you know, slasher of today sort of
thing. And that's something that we should mention is that Ty West writes his films. I mean, most of them anyway, maybe not his television projects, but he scripts these things. And he wrote Pearl while in pre-production in New Zealand for this film because they all got stuck over there with COVID. And he was locked and confined to his room. And so he communicated with Mia Goth via Skype or whatever, and they wrote Pearl together. And that's another amazing thing. I was going to wait till I got into trivia, but basically Pearl was greenlit before this movie even got through filming.
Yeah, two of the sources I looked at said that while they were still shooting this, he approached Mia Goth and said, would you do a prequel? I've got the script ready. Would you do a prequel? And she actually stayed. She canceled her return home and stayed in New Zealand, and they shot Pearl.
She did. And I think that before I'm like you. I read a few different things. I think that it happened. I think he started writing it before they started filming this because I think they got delayed because of COVID, and he was. I don't know that she co-wrote it, but I think he was doing things to like get her to know the character of Pearl. And in those conversations is how they developed this backstory that eventually became a prequel. That's my colorization of it. But anyway, it did get greenlit before they finished this film, and it came out the same year as this film.
Oh, yeah.
They both came out the same year. They filmed them back to back.
And there was something else that we had earlier on a couple of years ago in a podcast where we realized that two movies came out in the same year. It wasn't like Frankenstein and Dracula, but it was something like that where we realized as we're doing the research that two of these big, huge movies came out within the same year of each other.
Universal would make sense because a lot of those monster movies were filmed pretty close.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I remember that similar thing because when I found out Pearl was released in like December of the same year that, you know, X was released.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dracula and Frankenstein are both 1931.
So that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
As far as awards, the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy and Horror, the Saturn Awards, nominated it for Best Horror Film. It didn't win. I wonder what won that year. Anyway, it was just, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Several nominations on the festival circuit. It is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die, but that is because of its age. That list has not been updated in at least 6 years. He doesn't do it that often. So it could be, but I don't know that I would put it on there, but I would put it on my horror list because I love this movie. I know it. I put it on the list, but it's based on your recommendation. You saw it before me, and I knew it was going to be good. So I was just like, I'm going to wait and watch this for the first time when we do this episode.
Yeah, I do that all the time. When we put our series out, and I go, oh, I could watch it right. No, it's on the list for next year. I'll watch it then, you know.
Yeah. Did you want to do a little trivia before we get into Keys?
I have some trivia. One is... and I found this on a source online, but they said that if you actually, because I was looking up, you know, the cliches of the slasher film and the fact that, you know, Wayne's death is kind of cliche, blah, blah, blah. And did anybody else agree with that in reviews? But one guy said, what you don't understand is a lot of the foreshadow layering in this script. Like when they first leave before the credit sequence and they're leaving the strip club, there's a mural of a woman whose underwear is being tugged off by a guitar, by an alligator. And she's a blonde woman, just like Bobby Lynn, who's the Brittany Snow character.
Where is this?
This is at the very beginning when he goes, come on, baby, let's get in the van, after she's done her
mirror.
And it's
that weird building with, it doesn't look like it has a door, yeah.
Right, the door in the center of it because it's
but
the
it's painted
club.
The same color as the wall, so it's kind of invisible. Yeah.
It's the strip club, and the mural is almost like a takeoff of the Coppertone ad. It's a blonde stripper whose underwear is being tugged off by an alligator.
You know, I remember it, but I didn't pay that much attention to it. Yep. Okay.
All right. Keeps going. Wayne, at one point, says, you know what? This is going to be so good. It's going to make their eyes pop out. And that's how he's killed, is stabbed through the eyes.
That's great.
Jackson is talking to Howard and says, Don't worry about it, old man. I served 3 tours in NAM. I'm used to farmers holding guns on me. And that's how he ends up being killed, is by a farmer with a gun.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting for trivia, and it was kind of weird. Another one, and you actually highlighted this. I went, as soon as the credits started, it said A24. I went, man, I want to do some research on them. So looked up A24. Their movie list.
It's great.
Is amazing.
And they're now delving into more mainstream than horror. But they started off at almost predominantly horror.
Well, like a few of the ones that they distributed that we've either done or are on our list or whatever. The Witch, Midsommar, The Room, The Lighthouse, Ex Machina, Under the Skin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
It Comes at Night.
Hereditary. It Comes at Night.
Yeah.
And the next one they've got coming out is one we mentioned in last week's episode, Civil War, comes from A24.
Okay. And then Beau Is Not Afraid is on is streaming now. I want to see that too.
And that's by, what's his name? That's another
director. It's Ari Aster, the guy that did Hereditary and Midsommar. Yeah.
And Midsommar, So well,
that's a nice segue, because before we get into Keys and we're doing trivia, I just want to talk about how thrilling it is to have this cadre of fucking horror movie directors that are so good.
Yes.
I mean, you remember like back 20 years ago when they were all saying, oh, it's going to be Rob Zombie, and we were all like, no, it's not. But I mean, look at what we have now. We have Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
We have Mike Flanagan.
Yeah.
We have Robert Eggers. We have Ari Aster and Ty West. I mean, that's 5 solid fucking horror movie directors right now. And if you people out there don't believe me, you need to look again.
Yeah.
Because these are good horror movie directors.
Yeah, it feels like late 70s, early 80s again with, you know, Tobe Hooper and John Carpenter and all the rest
of them. But even back then, they didn't have, you know, they were hit or miss.
The budgets. No, yeah.
I mean, Tobe Hooper really only had one great movie. Carpenter had a couple.
Yeah.
You know, George Romero had a couple. These guys are hitting it out of the park almost every time.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're being given, with A24 and other production companies like that, they're being given kind of auteur status. You know, do your vision. Do your movie.
Yes. And it works.
And it works when you have an Ari Aster or you have an Eggers. I mean, they're just very visual storytellers, which works too.
And we'll get to see Nosferatu soon.
And changing the genre. You know, they're changing the way we approach horror. Hereditary, you know, still is... It's on a lot of people's upper 5 lists or top 10s or whatever. And it's because it is so freaking disturbing and the way it tells its story. So
I just picked up a book. I haven't read it yet. I can't even remember the name of it. So I'm a bad host. But it's like queer reflections in horror. And it's basically queer writers taking a horror movie and writing their... what that film meant to them, basically. Mm-hmm. And Hereditary is right up in there. I was like, oh, wow, that's modern.
Yep.
You know, because I'm thinking Night of the Living Dead, and it's not in there at all. But The Exorcist is. I'll talk about it after I read it, because I may not like it. But anyway.
I have in my trivia notes, I have a correction for what I said earlier, because I said there's no incidental music in this, and there actually is. And it's in those long shots and some of the things, and it's women's voices. It's very female and very vocal and almost Rosemary's Baby kind of, is that, you know, that,
There's you can hear whispering. In
yeah, this. Almost like little girls are.
And if you women, listen to the credits, when the music gets really soft, it comes back and it's yes. really creepy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've got sound editing in general in this, I think, is very well done. Like mm-hmm. when it kept cutting back before, you know, RJ's in the cab of the truck or the van and you're hearing Don't Fear the Reaper on the radio and then it cuts to Pearl and her view and you can barely hear the radio in the background because it's coming from the truck. And it keeps cutting back and forth between them. It gets louder and softer and louder and softer. It's just really cool the way they do the sound editing.
I think that it's probably got something to do with some of those crews in New Zealand that they're using. And maybe ties on to something. Maybe he ought to tell some of these other horror directors, go to New Zealand. It's yeah. cheaper and they're better.
Yeah. And they know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. And their special mm-hmm. effects company is just state of the art.
Yeah. 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 It was really good. Trivia, you have any more?
The only other thing I was going to mention, and this is kind of long. I'll try to skim it without sounding like an idiot. But the history of the X rating used by the MPAA from 1968 to 1990 indicated the film was only suitable for someone age 16 or over. The mm-hmm. idea for the rating was that, like, unlike other certificates, it would not be trademarked and would allow filmmakers to release their films in theaters without needing to submit to the MPAA.
Right.
Remember those days?
Mm-hmm.
Notable films with those released with a released X rating were Clockwork Orange, mm-hmm. Fritz the Cat, Last Tango in Paris, Midnight Cowboy, and something called Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. I've never heard of that.
I don't know.
Anyway, in the 1970s, the porn industry would wind up exploiting the X rating's lack of a trademark by releasing pornos in theaters with the same rating. Eventually, X became more associated with porn, and yep. more and more theaters started to refuse showing films with an X rating, forcing non-pornographic films to be censored or to receive R ratings. In 1990, the MPAA discontinued the X rating and replaced it with NC-17. Unlike X, NC-17 was trademarked and could not be self-applied, but it still meant most theaters could not show films with the rating, resulting in censorship once again. Anyway, I just found that fascinating. I did not know the history of X rating and how porno took advantage of it, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They stripped it totally. Pardon the pun. And they also started adding to it. So that's how you got double X started, and then you
and
had triple X.
Like, and, what's the difference? You know, what's the difference with double X and a triple X?
Well, and I noticed in the graphic logo for Maxine, which is a key, which is the
it's
sequel.
The next.
To
it's
this.
The sequel. Yeah.
She has three X's in her name.
Yeah, it's Maxine with three X's.
Yeah. I went, yeah.
That's okay, awesome. Cool. It's awesome the way he's playing off of this.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can't wait till you see Pearl. Okay. I mean, that's – I would be close to adding that to our list for next season.
Wow.
Because that is a very unique movie.
Okay.
But we need to talk about this one. We're going to talk about some keys. And I have a pretty good bit.
Yeah. Go.
How about you? Do you have any?
I have a few. I have like six keys, yeah. But, I mean, some of them I've mentioned, some of the other ones I've mentioned already.
You know, right, well, this one is based on a scene that I neglected to mention earlier when I was talking about favorite scenes, but I went back and watched this three times because it made me laugh so hard. And it is the scene where Maxine gets the when Maxine is in the house and Howard has had the heart attack or whatever, and mm-hmm. Pearl shoots at her with the shotgun and goes flying backwards.
Oh, yeah. House. Breaks her hip.
I laughed so hard seeing that old woman go flying backwards. And my key is The Exorcist, because they yanked her just like they yanked Ellen Burstyn in that
had
scene
to.
In The Exorcist. She just goes flying backwards out of that door.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, and it's not because of something Maxine did. It's because of something she did. She
yeah.
fired that gun, and the kickback just sent her flying.
Well, from what I can remember, there's like four jump scares in the movie. The first one is when Maxine is running away from the old lady who gave her lemonade, and she runs right into Wayne, who catches her just right in frame. Boom. Where you been? I've been looking for you. We're getting ready to shoot.
Yeah,
the second one is the eyes, the suddenly stabbed in the eyes when he looks on the thing. Yeah. The third one is right before that scene is the alligator. The alligator bites a jump scare because
with the blonde. I can't think of her name. Yeah.
Well, Brittany Snow's the actress, but she's like Jennifer Lynn or Brenda Lynn or what's her name? What is her?
Bobby Lynn. Mm-hmm. Bobby Lynn.
And she's, well, you old lady, blah, blah, blah. And she pushes her in the water and, rah, you know. And then the last one I can remember is right before the scene you're talking about, because the Jenna Ortega character finally gets out of the basement because Maxine lets her out and she goes running past her. Bam!
She's blown away. Great. She gets away. As soon as she's outside, she gets blown away by a shotgun.
I mean, blown away. Her whole face. Yeah.
And this movie, unlike The Innkeepers, this movie is not a comedy horror movie.
No.
And really, The Innkeepers is not either. It just has funny moments. But people like you and I and that enjoy horror movies as much as we do could laugh at these things because they are hysterical. And that, to me, when she gets out, is almost as funny as when Pearl gets the kickback from the shotgun. Yeah.
Tim laughs at pain. He laughs at pain all the time.
I laugh at funny shit with old people. And there are old people, they're killers in this movie, and it's great.
My biggest key you mentioned already, which is Texas Chainsaw. This whole opening first 15 minutes is Texas Chainsaw. Even riding in the van, talking in the van, handing out the scripts in the van. Scripts that have the brass push pins in them, just like in the 70s we used to have on scripts and stuff. And the whole kind of everything is bright and sunlit and idyllic and all that, but you know something bad is going to happen. You just
The only thing it is very Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I will give you that because of the bloody murder scene and the house, but it's not shot like Texas.
No,
because Texas does it in stills. And there's a lot of like loud fly buzzing and flies landing on things.
Yeah,
and
at
stuff.
The beginning.
Yeah,
but then they still do has the whole. You know, they're on the in Chainsaw. They're on the homage to the grave. They're going to go to the friend's grave site. That's what they're doing.
It's not an homage. It's just a trip.
But you know, that's where they're going, and that's why you get all
What do you call that? There is a name for that. I know what you're trying to reach for, but anyway.
Pilgrimage.
Pilgrimage, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which was taken from Night of the Living Dead. Again, key of a key kind of thing. But what I like about it is, like you said, there's a dread feeling to it. Even though everything's bright and sunny lit and they're all happy and they're smoking joints or whatever, you know, kind of thing. It's just that they don't pick up a hitchhiker who's going to hurt them later. Right. I have one direct homage is Psycho because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Jackson, when he's exploring, finds a car half buried in the lake. The little Volkswagen that's obviously there. And then later on, you hear Howard say, when
it's not a Volkswagen. It could be a Volkswagen.
It's a car.
But because there's a car in Pearl that they put in the lake.
Okay. Well,
but it's an old timey car.
Well, this was more modern, I think. Okay. And I'm pretty sure it was a Volkswagen. But anyway, you hear Howard later on when he's talking to Pearl saying, we'll just put their car in the lake later, like the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So you're going, okay, they've done
There's
this
plenty.
Before.
A, yeah, that lake's very, full of cars.
So it's a very Psycho, to me, revelation.
I totally get it. I had forgotten about that. I have Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
And the reason is the preacher on the television is always in the background, you know, prophesizing doom and shit. And in Night of the Living Dead, it's just newscasters doing the same thing.
Yep.
But it's always like a presence, and it's a presence in this movie as well.
Don't they start Dawn of the Dead the same way, except it's a TV studio, right?
It's a studio. It's a newsroom.
The newscast and the reels and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have another homage, which is, I don't know if it was intended, but I think it was, because I went back and looked at, there's a couple of shots where they're showing the guest house, you know, across the field. It's at night, and it's right when Howard is coming there to get Jackson out, and later on, it's somebody else. Anyway, you see a tree line behind them, and up in the upper right frame corner, you see the moon, and it's very Evil Dead. Like, the moon looks superimposed. It looks like it's not...
Bigger yeah, than normal.
It looks like it's not supposed to be in that shot, like they added it. And I thought, I wonder if he did that on purpose, just as an homage to Evil Dead.
70s film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So
I have, and this is a spoiler, folks, not just for this movie, but for a novel. Not really, though. Stephen King's last novel, Holly, is about a character that's a private detective named Holly Gibney. She's been in a couple of novels and short stories. And she, the killers in Holly are an old couple.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I say that's not really a spoiler is because he doesn't hide it. You know it right away.
Okay.
And it's still a wonderful book. And probably the closest thing to Silence of the Lambs I've ever read since Silence of the Lambs. But it is about an older couple. And in this, the killers are an older couple. I mean, old, just like they are in Holly. They're okay. Like, they have problems getting around. They have bad hips, that kind of thing. So that's a big key to me because I just read it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And my last one I have is, I wonder if Tarantino and Rodriguez look to this for Grindhouse. This is a Grindhouse movie to me. It reminds me of a Grindhouse movie.
You know, if they had known Ty West at the time, he would have probably been one of the ones to make a trailer in that film. Maybe he did. I can't remember.
I guarantee he has that feel because he can do these period pieces, especially the 70s and 80s, so well.
Yeah.
But this whole opening, even down to the strip club location, going to the van, going to the farmhouse, and then when they actually cut to scenes from the porno that are done in 4:3 and the really shuddery kind of look and everything else, I mean, it looks like Grindhouse drive-in movies.
It does. Yeah. It's very nostalgic.
Yeah.
I have some other keys that aren't necessarily – well, this one's not necessarily a horror movie. I put Little Big Man because of the makeup, the old age makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, both these actors are not old, and they are made up, and they look fucking old.
But there's a quality to old age makeup that always kind of pulls you out for a second. You always kind of go, is that makeup or not?
I noticed it more on Howard.
Yes.
But, yep. And then again, Howard reminded me of Dustin Hoffman in Little Big Man.
Even down to the one tooth missing and all that. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I put The Innkeepers because I just remembered that Jenna Ortega can't get out of one of those outdoor cellar door things because it's locked. It's the same thing in The Innkeepers. There's a scene where she's down in the basement of the hotel and she's trying to get out to an alley behind and it's locked. And she's the one that locked it in The Innkeepers because she's out walking around checking the grounds and she makes sure that door is locked. And then later she's trying to get out and she can't. It's her own fault.
And that whole character arc for her, I felt so sorry because she's like the little innocent at the beginning in the van. Then she watches them have a couple of sex scenes and she thinks, oh, I want to do it. She has a sex scene. Then she ends up getting trapped in the basement, horribly,
with a dead body,
horribly mutilated on her hand and then shot in the face with a shotgun. Damn.
Yeah, yeah.
What, and all in one day. What a weekend.
Yeah. No shit. And then lastly, this is another one that you gave me while we were talking. And it's the twist at the end where the preacher ends up being the father of Maxine's character.
Yeah.
That made me think of that movie Hardcore with George C. Scott, where his daughter gets lost in the porn industry.
Yeah.
And he goes on like a vengeance thing trying to find her.
Oh, yeah. Vendetta against.
It was a movie that used to stick with me in the 70s and 80s because it was always on HBO late at night.
Oh, yeah. Skinamax and everything. So right. I have to ask then. So Pearl is the prequel. Do we see Pearl's father in the prequel? The preacher?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, we don't see Maxine's father. We see Pearl's father.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're getting the characters confused, which is easy to do. It's very easy to do because Mia Goth plays both of them.
Yeah, once you know it, it's easy to go, oops, okay. Wait, that's going to freak me out.
Yeah, her parents in Pearl, her father's kind of an invalid, and her mother's German. She's real strict. And the intimacy coordinator for this movie is the woman that plays Pearl's mother in the prequel.
Okay.
She convinced them that she could speak German, and she learned it really quickly and fooled people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's she's cool like trivia for that one.
German. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was interesting. I had one that I copped from IMDb. It's my last one. That the name of the gas station mini-mart at the beginning of this film is called it says is in reference to the movie The Innkeepers.
Oh, okay. Same place or same name?
Well, it's called the one in The Innkeepers is a hotel called the Yankee Peddler. Is that what that was called?
I don't know. I didn't see
it. I don't remember. So maybe that's bogus. I have no idea. Sorry, folks.
Okay.
And that's all the keys I have, too. I mean, there's plenty of them. I mean, kind of nostalgic period piece like this is going to be full of them.
Oh, yeah. And it has some great horror cliches. It has some great tropes. I mean, it's just – it's a good homage to that whole genre in that time period.
I totally agree. And I keep wanting to say thank you for picking this movie when I'm the one that picked it.
You did pick it. I just seen it earlier.
Based on your recommendation. And I think David and I would both recommend folks out there to go see this movie.
Oh, yeah. Or
watch it on television. I mean, because I guess you don't have to go to see it now.
It's a porno with horror. Come on. You know?
There is a good bit of nudity in it, too.
There's some nudity. And yeah. I do think that – and do you think that Pearl and Howard are polyamorous? Do you think they've had other people in their relationship? I think
that they became that way because he was having troubles keeping it up. They hint at that.
Which means that Pearl probably is a nymphomaniac.
Quite. Yeah, I would say that's a good guess. Pearl's special.
But yeah, she is special. And folks, that's what Tim and I think. We would love to know what you guys think. Did you like X? Have you seen Pearl? What worked? What didn't? Anything we might have missed? Any key references or key points? Let us know down there in the comments. Do the typical thing of subscribe. That way you know about episodes that we have coming up and what's coming out. Visit our website, which has all of our past seasons and episodes on it. You can pick and choose horror, science fiction, whatever you might be in the mood for. And we also have a Patreon. If you really want to support the channel and support us, we'd appreciate it. And it's a way for us to continue to do this. And we have some special content there, some of it free and some of it tiered up, different things, including an examination of Star Trek, the original series, and The X-Files. That's two of our biggest that are on there. And also some past remembrances, some theater stuff, all kinds of crazy things are on there. And Tim, I guess.
Conventions. We did a conventions one too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was a late 70s homage. I guess we're going to an actual 80s movie next next week.
Yeah, it will be in 1985, and it's sci-fi, as it should be. Yes. And then we'll only have four more episodes until the end of this season, and one of them might be a very special redux.
Ooh! So,
there's a teaser for you.
Look forward to seeing you then.
I do too. I'll see you.
Have a good one.
All righty. Bye.
Bye.